Everybody, and welcome to the Project School Leadership Podcast. My name is Dr. Jerry Burkett. I want to thank everybody for listening and being a part of our show. I actually want to also thank all of my listeners and those that we've partnered with, the school districts that we've partnered with to produce these podcasts. The idea behind this is, I kind of say this all the time, if you listen on a regular basis, is, you know, I don't necessarily want to be one of these podcast people. I don't live and die by it. I'm not someone that is trying to monetize this in any sort of way. I want to know, as a professor, is it possible that podcasting can be a way to deliver professional development for busy principals, school leaders, even my graduate students? And we do this for our lectures and so forth. And anyway, so to get on topics, and just what I wanted to evolve the podcast in such a way that we're focusing on specific topics so that you can grow and be better. Well, hopefully we can expand it even more to have guests, folks that can provide their own perspective other than hearing from me all the time. So first thing I want to talk about today is avoiding conflict and how to manage conflict in a workplace environment, a school environment, because we're focusing on school leadership. And then as a corollary to that, because it's actually kind of related, in the second part of our show today, we'll talk about how we navigate difficult conversations. So that'll be part of our show. And then last, I'll provide a little bit of my own op-ed commentary. I recently went through an op-ed training course, and I've been learning how to write my opinions and submit opinions to newspapers. And so I have some commentary that I want to provide there later today. So that'll be the bulk of our show. So welcome. We're glad you're here. All right, so welcome back. First thing I want to do to talk about today is I want to talk about how to handle conflict and how we handle conflict in a school environment. And generally, this is something that falls on principals to have to deal with. And obviously, the idea is to not have conflict. But when you're dealing with people and being in the school business, we are in the people business, typically you're going to have some level of conflict. And so for school leaders to have to handle this, whether it be a parent or student or teacher, or even some of those scenarios that you could possibly think of where it's a administrator and parent, or student and student, or teacher and teacher, or teacher and administrator, you can kind of see how these one person versus another can create scenarios whereby you have some sort of conflict. So dealing with it, it starts with emotional intelligence. And what I mean by emotional intelligence is, and there's actually some great books out there on emotional intelligence, and if it's something that you're interested in, I encourage you to read those. But emotional intelligence is basically, how do you handle yourself? And do you have the emotional maturity to basically see a situation, focus on a situation, and handle it in the most appropriate, mature kind of way without letting egos get involved, your own personal ego with the egos of other people, but also handling it in the situation where people might walk away with a little bit of dignity, understanding, respect. You may not resolve the conflict initially, but basically it's a way of saying you're level-headed. And not everybody has the emotional intelligence to do that. I want you to think about certain situations where an individual was so upset, it's clearly that you're not going to be able to rationalize with that person because of the level of their emotional intelligence has run ragged. Maybe they're super angry, or maybe they have a disability that doesn't allow them to understand how a particular issue is impacting them personally. So that happens from time to time. And so emotional intelligence is part of having that understanding of how to deal with conflict. So, and when dealing with conflict, you need to kind of remember that it's not about you. You've got to keep your own emotions in check, your own ego in check, because oftentimes what can be said during a conflict could make you feel like they're attacking you. It can make you feel like the situation is out of control or out of your hands, or maybe they're degrading you in some way, your intelligence, your race, your ethnicity, your religion. Those things kind of happen in extreme cases. So you have to remember sometimes, especially if dealing with children with disabilities, it's not necessarily them talking. Sometimes it's a disability talking. Or you might be dealing with an individual that doesn't have the emotional intelligence to handle what the conflict is telling them. So You kind of have to have an open ear and an open eye for some of those things. What we're talking about here, obviously, it seems it's rooted in communication. And when you went through your graduate courses or your undergraduate courses, you may or may not have taken a ton of classes on communication. If you did, you probably didn't spend a whole lot of time focused on the unique aspect of communication. There are entire degrees in communication. It's a whole field of study, how we write, how we speak, verbal, nonverbal, our body language. There's so much that goes into communication that we're just simply not taught all of those aspects of communication. So just being able to handle some of these things is rooted in very good communication. So when dealing with conflict, obviously we want to talk with that other person and we want to focus on the behavior that's occurring and not the events. And we're also not focusing on personalities. Sometimes we dwell on things that happened in the past, or maybe we dwell on how we were treated at another time. We can't focus on those issues. We can only focus on the issues that are happening right now, that are happening in front of us. And if there's something that can be rectified because it occurred in the past, we don't necessarily want to bring that forward all the time. We might want to address it. Let's go, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. But right now, let's focus on this issue at hand. And so much of conflict resolution really is rooted in listening. Your ability to sit back, control your emotions, like we've been saying, and then listen carefully to what the other person is saying. And part of that listening is for you to kind of identify some points here and there where you agree and some points where you might disagree. And during the case, while you're doing that, you really want to try to prioritize what's happening here. Trying to get to the root of the conflict, or is there something else that's causing this situation? That's where you can sort of prioritize what's happening here. Because again, it's not about the fight or the conflict that's happening. It's getting to the root cause. What's happening here? How can we rectify it? So you start to prioritize what's important or what's not important, what can be addressed now, what can be addressed later, and so on. Again, this comes with listening carefully, focusing on the behavior and the events and not necessarily the personalities of what's happening. So if you're able to do that successfully, your next course of action is to develop a plan and to work on the issues that have been brought to you, whether it's you're having an issue with someone or you're dealing as a mediator between two other people. So you want to have a plan in place. Now, how are we going to work on these things? How are we going to address the issues that are at the forefront? And the most important piece of this is probably the piece that most people struggle with, is following through with that plan. Making sure that both parties agree, making sure that they understand what's going on, and making sure that if you're serving as a mediator in this particular scenario, that you're going to follow up, that you're going to go to each person individually and talk to them, hey, have we been working on this issue? Where are we with this? Where are we with the deliverables if they have to turn something in or something is due? That's part of the responsibility you're going to have, is to follow through to make sure that individuals are doing what they need to, because you can pretty much you can guess what's going to happen if you don't. It's likely not going to resolve itself. And look, we work in the people business. Not everyone's going to like each other. You can try. Hopefully you've learned enough about building a great climate and a culture that people do generally like being at your school and want to work with each other. But there's no law and there's no rule and there's no policy that says we all have to like each other. We just have to get along, and we have to get along in a professional way so that we can serve our students and serve our community. So you can go home and just, cuss them out. It's like, I don't like them. And they're a pain. But when you get back to work the next day, you've got to set all that aside to be able to accomplish your goals. And as part of being a school leader is to follow through to make sure that those things are actually happening. And then the last part is simply build on that success. Once you've able to step in and resolve a conflict, build on that success. What worked? What didn't work? Do these people not need to work with each other again? Or have they demonstrated that they make an outstanding team? Whatever it is that you're going through in that particular time, whatever the conflict was rooted in, make sure you set aside some time to build upon that success. But before we wrap up this segment, let me just caution you not to avoid the situation, not to avoid the conflict. It can be easy at times as busy school leaders that sometimes we're presented with a conflict, or we're told about a conflict, and then we ignore it, we set it aside, we don't think about it, we're just busy. Or you might be thinking in the back of your mind, that's not my problem, that's between them two, I don't want any part of it, a lot of those times they kind of go through your head. And depending on the severity of the situation, and again, this is part of your school leadership training too, is being able to, on a, say, conflict continuum, decide what needs immediate intervention and what does not. That's also part of your emotional intelligence. But avoiding situations altogether oftentimes is an endorsement of the behavior. Now, if you're a parent, you know that as well. You know that times that when you ignore a behavior, that is actually an endorsement. You're okay with it. If you're not okay with a certain behavior, if you're not okay with the way certain individuals might be treating each other during the course of a conflict, and you ignore it and you avoid it, that in turn is an endorsement of that behavior. So I think that's a critical piece of being a school leader, is that if it's intolerable and it's outside of your scope and range of what you expect from the folks that work with you or live in, and or work in your school community, addressing the situation is something that you would definitely want to do. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back in a few.
Sounds dry.
Welcome back to the Project School Leadership Podcast. My name is Dr. Jerry Burkett. I want to thank you all for joining us again. Something else that's kind of been on my mind here for as we focus more on school leadership, it's a question that I get quite often, and it's how to navigate difficult conversations. I don't have an answer for you. I can only tell you what some great communication professors have suggested. I've been part of difficult conversations, and they're never fun. Principals, school leaders, you're going to have difficult conversations. You're going to have difficult conversations with parents, with students, with teachers. If you, for some reason, have to bring a teacher into your office and tell them that their career is ended with you, their time as a teacher is finished, I don't envy you. I've had those conversations 3 or 4 times in my career. They're not easy conversations to have. I can give you advice on how to deal with those in a later time in another podcast. But for now, I want to talk about how we navigate through those difficult conversations, or at least the ones that you probably dread. You know they're not going to go well. You think the ones that are going to go bad, like if you're delivering bad news or you've got to share something that they're not going to agree with or not going to be happy with. So hopefully, you know, there's some tips here that maybe that can help you. So let's start with now. First things first. This doesn't matter whether it's a difficult conversation or anything, but as a school leader, hey, you're not alone. Bring in support whenever you need it. You've got assistant principals, you've got colleagues, you've got counselors, you've got, you know, an administrative staff that you can help and support. You've got district level people you could call. If you've got an issue, then call them. Bring in support whenever you need to. That way you don't feel alone. At least to have them in the room. If you trust them, and if it's appropriate, of course, there are some situations where it may not be appropriate to have that person in the room, but bring in that support whenever you need. The second thing I would offer to you is don't procrastinate. That hanging on to this conversation doesn't mean it's going to go away. You got to get in there and you got to rip off that Band-Aid and you got to get it done. So make sure that you don't procrastinate the tough conversation. Get it done. Get it off your plate. But before you do that, what I think you should do is sit down and draft out what you want to say. I often do this actually for my podcast. As much as I like to riff and just talk, and most of the time I am just riffing and just talking, I do have a sheet in front of me, you can hear it, that it's my call sheet. It's how I know what I want to say, the points that I want to make. I just have them written in bullet points. That way I know that I'm making those points, and then I riff off of those points. You want to plan your talking points, just like I've done here for the show. Plan your talking points. You're not writing out a speech. You're not doing that. You're just planning some talking points. It's actually a great presentation technique. I do it when I go to conferences. I just put a bullet point up and I talk about the bullet point because I know what I want to say. But the point that I want to get across is what the individual can read. You want to do the same thing for planning out your difficult conversation. As part of that planning, just the facts. We're only going to focus on facts. We're not going to focus on what ifs, the hypotheticals. I don't like hypotheticals. I just dealt with this in a situation last week at a school that just kept dealing with what if. What if this happens? Or what if this person does this? I don't deal in hypotheticals because I can't predict the situation. I can plan for what might occur based upon policy and law. But hypotheticals, you know, we can go round and round and round all day long. What if? Well, what if they don't? You know, so we don't deal in hypotheticals, we only deal in facts. And if we're dealing with a difficult conversation, it's best to lead with facts and not hypothesis or what ifs. This also might be difficult, but it goes back to our emotional intelligence conversation that we were having in our first segment, and that is consider the other person's perspective. And again, this is where that listening and that practice of good, active listening comes into play, because sometimes their perspective can actually add some information to you that you may or may not have, depending on the situation. But it also might diffuse the anger and prevent it from leading into conflict, like we talked about in the first segment as well. So we don't want to avoid that conflict. If conflict happens, we know how to deal with it now. But in the course of a conversation, just simply listening and hearing another person's perspective can often diffuse the issue going into extreme conflict. You certainly want to be confident. Confidence is key here. You're the boss. You're the leader. It's happening on your terms. You've set the meeting. You're driving the conversation. So be confident, confident in what you're saying, confident in the documentation you're presenting, confident in those facts. Be confident in what you're, because if you show any kind of weakness here, you have lost the audience. You've lost completely. So be confident, but also be empathetic. You want to be empathetic to the situation. You might be firing this person. You might be sending them, you might be ending their career. So you need to have some empathy. Now, while your job is to serve students and you want to put the best teachers out there, sometimes you have to let someone go. And when you're having that conversation, you have some empathy. Now, I know sometimes that's tough. This person may have made you just riddled with anger and paperwork and all kinds of issues, but it will help at least get you through the conversation to have a little bit of empathy. Last but not least, remember to listen. Be a good listener. They have a lot to say. They may have some things to say that are of relevance. They may have some things to say that are not of relevance, but you got to listen. Case in point, there was a time that I had to let a teacher go because we had documented them and their behaviors in the classroom were unacceptable to some of the things that we were doing at the time. We had to let the teacher go because they just weren't doing the job we expected them to do. And part of the things that we expect them to do, they're just kind of taking an old school approach. And we were trying to change their behavior. And we had put them through training and we had sent them, we modeled it. This is the way this is when you handle this situation X, this is how it needs to be handled. This teacher refused to do that. And every single time we had to document that. When we finally had to bring them in and say, you know what, it's not happening. It's not working for you. This isn't working out. We've tried all of these interventions. And then, you know, they had a lot of things to say to us about how we were screwing up the school, how things in education swing in one direction and they'll swing right back in the other, and that we were doing the wrong thing. And you can't help to walk out of conversations like that second-guessing yourself oftentimes or thinking, oh, man, they got a mortgage and they got cars, car payments, and they've got a kid. Am I making the right decision here? Try not to second-guess yourself. Remember, you are serving kids, and as a school leader, it's your job to make sure that you have the best teachers possible to do that. And if you don't have teachers living up to your expectations or the expectations of the district, or even in some cases, the expectations of the state, then they've got to go. I tell my students all the time, and this goes back to my old superintendent, who say this to us, you coach them up or you coach them out. And that's going to require that difficult conversation if you decide that your coaching has been unsuccessful. We'll be back. Sounds good. Welcome back to the Project School Leadership Podcast. My name is Dr. Jerry Burkett. Welcome. I'm going to end the show here with a little bit of commentary as I practice my foray into the op-ed world. And I want to talk about something that's I'm probably not going to talk about once. I'm going to talk about on a regular basis because it's school shootings, man. These things have got to stop. And I don't know what more we need to do to prevent gun violence in this country. And I'm a football fan, like a lot of you, and you know, the shooting that occurred at the Kansas City Chiefs celebration parade, it just was one more example of, I just don't know that we've done enough to make America safe for children. You know, parades are an American institution. and we'd line up for parades at Independence Day, or I went to the Texas Rangers celebration parade when they won the World Series, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and it's American, and then all of a sudden, gunfire just rings out. And we hear about shootings on TV, and they kind of capture our headlines for about 48 hours, and then we don't hear anything from our elected officials. And we're talking about kids here. We're talking about children being able to go to schools or churches, shopping malls, and now parades. These are American public spaces that were supposed to be gathering spots for kids to go and enjoy and grow, and now they're not safe. And I just think now they're just icons for gun violence. And I think parents should reconsider if these spaces can even be enjoyed by kids without even fear of injury or death. In the past couple of weeks, a shooting occurred at Joel Osteen's church in Houston. And then a shooting occurred at the Super Bowl champion parade in Kansas City. And then in Mesquite, Texas, a 16-year-old boy brought a gun on campus and had to be subdued by police because they brought a gun to a school administrator's office and wouldn't put it down. And in these instances, one child has died and 12 others have been injured. These are children. They're not soldiers. They're not law enforcement. They're not gang members. They're not hardened criminals. They're kids. They're children. Now, these places that we go to, that they're for worship or celebration, we're supposed to be able to go to them without being worried about getting shot. Like if I go to the mall to buy a new shirt or buy a pair of shoes or get ready for school to start or whatever, I shouldn't have to worry about being shot. Common sense should tell us that, but usually when these tragedies happen and when they do occur and they will occur again, what we do is just add more guns. We add more security instead of addressing that focal issue that more guns don't really make us safer, guys. They don't. You can gaslight us all you want. They don't. If you think about it and you put some serious thought into it, our country is starting to look like other countries in the world. And I know you have a mental picture of this, where guns in public spaces are becoming a commonplace. And we're just expected to accept the presence of guns as a social norm. What we haven't done is accept that firearms are the leading cause of death for children in the United States. That is a fact. Firearms, number one cause of death in the United States. No other country in the world even comes close to this statistic when it comes to gun violence that the United States does. We don't even come close. We lead in this category in poor neighborhoods, in wealthy neighborhoods. No child is immune to the exposure of gun violence or mass shooting in their community, period. This is not a poor issue or a wealthy issue. It's not a black issue or a Hispanic issue or a white issue. It is an issue, and it is impacting our children. But every time this comes up, the political will change this course of action and impact these statistics in any meaningful way, it's just seemingly non-existent. So I wondered, if kids dying in schools like Sandy Hook or Uvalde or Parkland or at the Allen Outlet Mall or at churches like Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church, like if that doesn't capture your attention, or maybe a parade will, where you just go to celebrate a Super Bowl champion, you just want to go support your heroes, your team, you just want to go cheer them on and see the trophy, and wave at Patrick Mahomes, and wave at Travis Kelce, maybe that'll change your mind. And look, I get it. You probably are sick of hearing this. And gun violence and Second Amendment, it's controversial. I don't have an opinion on it that I'm willing to share, at least in a public forum. I also know this issue is not going to be solved in a brief 10-minute rant on a podcast that not very many people are actually going to hear. It's going to take a significant action and some brave leadership to really tackle this topic. And unfortunately, this topic of guns has been used as a political weapon, that's pun intended, to gather votes. And it's been used to retain positions of leadership. It's been used to instill fear. But then when these leaders actually take the helm and another incident occurs, all we get from them is thoughts and prayers. Then we wait for the issue to fade so we can move on with life. And I'm sure that you'll agree that the effects of doing nothing about gun violence so far has actually yielded no results. When you do nothing, nothing happens. But it does come at a cost, and it comes at right now, it's the cost of the lives of children. So maybe it's time that we depoliticize this topic. Can we bring all elected officials together and wipe off our political labels and just wipe those away? And just start a conversation like, what can we do to make America safer for kids? Like, what can we do about that? Or is this just not a topic that politicians can get behind because Well, protecting guns in this country is in the Second Amendment. It's in the Bill of Rights. And protecting the lives of children, it's not. That's our show for today. I appreciate everyone listening. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.